back to Shattering Miss. I am Yada. We're here with Kirk and with Glenn. You know, Kirk, I don't know how you came upon the stories that you revealed a week ago that disclosed that the United States, long before the Syrian protests in the street, years before them, had specifically planned to destabilize the Assad regime by aiding and abetting a Sunni-Shia war. But I assume that you found a periodical that that was keyed to Assad's most recent book and release of cables. But it couldn't have been on the mainstream media because the mainstream media didn't cover it.
We listen to a lot of different things and we read a lot of different things, and then all of a sudden you connect this to that and then you follow this article, and before you know it, it's there. I mean, most of this stuff is out there if you look for it, but you have to dig. But
I mean, this may be when you consider the fact that the Syrian war is the single most important thing happening in the world today. That you've got Russia and the United States on opposing sides. Mm-hmm. That you've got 300,000 people dead. That you have several countries, including Iraq and Iran, that are in complete chaos. And that you find that with the United States blaming Assad for the war, blaming the Islamic State for the war, that it was the United States that actually deliberately and knowingly caused the war. And this is a war now that has displaced at least 10 million people, causing the greatest catastrophe in European history. And yet, there isn't a single news agency of any consequence that wants to do a story on the cables being revealed from the U.S. government that preceded all of this, that called for it to be accomplished in exactly this way?
Mm-hmm.
God, it's just, I mean, it's almost sickening. I mean, it's, you know, my first reaction this morning after just being angry, mm-hmm. when I read this first article and then the second and third and fourth, was to say, so what am I doing? Why am I even doing this show? You know, I've been screaming this from the rooftops for 10 years now, that the United States is at best amoral and is actually a counterproductive force in the world and is literally destroying itself and the world. You know, to an audience in that at best is in the tens of thousands that listen occasionally or regularly to this program, primarily via the archives.
Yeah.
Why? You know, what's the point? And here you find absolute affirmation that everything you've said is true, and it's far worse than what you've said. And yet you know that what you've said already is so shrill, is so opposed to the common, I don't want to say think, the common indoctrination, the common buzz that is just accepted as fact by Americans, that most people are going to just turn the other way because our position is way too extreme, and yet it isn't nearly as extreme as is justified by the evidence.
Well, that's why you really can't talk about it very much. I mean, it always smacks of some type of nutcase with their conspiracy.
Yeah.
When it's not territorial, it's they plan these things for their own whatever most they think they're going to get out of it.
Right. You know, and I'm not going to go to the conspiracy of the Rockefellers or the conspiracy of the United Nations or the conspiracy of the Bilderbergers or the conspiracy of the Round Table or the conspiracy of the Trilateral Commission. I don't think you need to go there. I mean, what these documents demonstrate beyond any doubt is that the U.S. government is an institution that is actually guided and controlled by the CIA, the FBI, the Justice Department, military intelligence, and the Department of Defense, in league with America's largest corporations, and that collectively they have deliberately brought the world into this caustic terrorist melee for their own, their own purposes. I can't say for their own benefit, but certainly for their own purposes.
Right. Well, it's not church and state, it's business and state now.
Wow.
And where's the big prize? The big prize has to be the Middle East, because it has so much tremendous wealth.
At what cost?
Well, they obviously don't consider the cost.
You know, so you're going to, you know, originally we wanted a pipeline across Afghanistan, which is why we invaded. It had nothing to do with Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda was an ally of the United States. It had nothing to do with the Taliban. The Taliban was an ally of the United States. Had all to do with the pipeline we wanted to build across Afghanistan, and at the cost of thousands of American lives and trillions of dollars, we didn't even sniff it. We tried to build the road that would enable the building of the pipeline, couldn't even do that, because the cost was too egregious. The cost in lives, the cost in terrorist destruction, because of the caustic nature of the Islamic environment there, we couldn't even build it. All of that for naught. And then we go in, when we failed there, then we go into Iraq and we break Iraq. And then we think, well, you know, maybe we can turn this into at least a pipeline from our Sunni OPECers through Syria. We'll bring down the connection between the Ukraine and Russia, which will preclude the Iranian and Caspian Sea and Russian oil into Europe. And then we'll control it, because we'll use our empire, our military, to control Syria, and we'll put the pipeline across Syria. What's it going to cost? 20 million refugees? A million lives? And then after all of that, the environment is so caustic that the monster we made to enable it makes it impossible to implement.
I read a New York Times article this morning that just blew me away.
Yeah.
Not quite as offensive, probably, as some of the stuff you're talking about, but here's a couple bullet points. New York Times article, the U.S. and Iraq pursue ISIS on several fronts. Now, think how stupid that sounds.
Yeah.
The U.S. Now, Iraq is Iran.
Right.
Our allies are Saudis.
Right, and you know who the 100% of the generals for the Iraqi military are either Russian or Iranian. The Russians and the Iranians are in complete control of the Iraqi military that America has supplied, and we're going to use them to go after the Islamic State. Collectively, we all created the Islamic State.
Well, that's I know. It just gets worse and worse through the article. It says ISIS is against Syria, and the U.S. government is against Syria, and then we're fighting ISIS, and we're fighting them with Shias, which is the most absurd thing. And then it goes on later in the article.
And we're partnering with Shias to fight Sunnis, while we're partnering with the Sunnis to fight Shias. I mean, we're partnering with Turkey and Qatar and with Saudi Arabia to disable the Shiite government that is in control from Tehran of Syria. And at the same time, we're aiding and abetting, providing the weapons and providing... But we have 5,000 troops in Baghdad, providing the military intelligence for the Shias to fight the Islamic State. I think, yeah, it is so convoluted, so twisted, that it could not have happened by accident, and we found out it didn't happen by accident.
No.
And we created this quagmire, this unending terrorist quagmire, so that we could sell more military hardware. And it just dawned on me that when Assad was claiming that the American empire is based almost entirely on the U.S. military bases, which is empowers America's military in this regard, that it gives us the influence, that when we sell billions of dollars worth of weapons, and one of the articles that I read indicated that 75% of the military hardware sold to Islamic nations in the Middle East comes from America, 75%. That when we sell that hardware, we in fact create a proxy military base, because they can't operate the equipment without our guidance. They can't maintain it without our support.
Correct. You have to train the flyers of the planes and all.
Yeah, exactly. And so...
through everything. They can't do anything.
Right. As a matter of fact, right now we're brokering the Israeli... David's arrow, or David's sling, I think, which is the dome of steel, or whatever they call it, in Israel that protects Israel against the very rockets that we are enabling Iran to supply to Gaza. And now all of the Sunni nations want it, knowing that we have aided and abetted the Iranians in completing their nuclear program. I mean, what a world. We have Paul calling in from New Jersey on the line. Let's hear what Paul has to say, Kirk. Go ahead.
Hello, gentlemen. I'd like to make 2 points, if I may. The first one being, remember in 2006 there was an attack on what was called the Golden Mosque. I think it was in Colts, Samara.
Okay.
And that was, at the time, there was relative peace between the Sunnis and Shiites.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, that was an attack, I think it was a Shiite mosque, and that's what really started the ball rolling of the conflict between the Sunni Shiites. And this was under American occupation, so I believe that was probably a CIA job to instigate and start off the religious conflict.
Well, since the CIA document that has been published by WikiLeaks declares that the CIA had operatives and weapons at their disposal specifically to create that Sunni religious conflict in Iraq so that it would spill over into Syria, I can't argue with you. I don't think anybody can. Wow. It's just hard to think this negatively about one's country. And I've had a dim view of America for some time now. The more, you know, I've gone from a flag waving patriot, pro-military, pro-government, active in politics, to being disappointed in myself for those things. But, Paul, as it relates to that mosque, here's the things that we know for absolute certain. That the Islamic State began as the Awakening Program. And that the Islamic State exists because America took the life of Saddam Hussein, who as a secular dictator was able to keep relative peace between Sunnis and Shia Muslims. And we took him out of power and then provided a massive military and policing force for Shia Muslims who were controlled entirely out of Tehran. And that they used that force to massacre Sunni Muslims in Iraq. And that because we knew we had aided and abetted one side in what would be a civil war, Petraeus and George Bush created the Awakening Program during the surge to provide weapons and money to Sunni warlords that were in the Saddam Hussein regime, and that that became the basis of what is now the Islamic State. And they then began to use those weapons to defend Sunnis against the Shias that America had empowered. And that began the Civil War. It's a civil war that we knowingly created, and we armed both sides. That is absolutely certain. Now, whether or not we also caused the Sunnis to do something that would infuriate Shias, and the Shias to do things that would infuriate Sunnis, I think it is likely. I don't think there's a prayer that the Shia government of Iraq could have used American weapons to bomb Fallujah and other Sunni communities had it not received approval and support from America.
That's right out of the CIA playbook for Syria, too.
It is. What Kirk just said is exactly what the CIA playbook for how to create the conflict in Syria that would bring Assad down. It's exactly what it said. It said that not only should America arm both sides, but that America should plant ideas like this and then exaggerate the consequence to create the impression that everything in the region has fallen apart and that everybody in the region needs to arm themselves and to choose sides and that we would specifically do these very things. And you can be certain, like this hospital story, the way I began with the hospital story in Afghanistan is because here you have absolute proof that the United States cased the hospital, then bombarded the hospital, and then lied about every aspect of the mass murder and belligerence. Doing the same thing in Syria. We're the cause of it. Hey, you know what the governor of Minnesota, Scott just sent me this article. You know what the governor in Minnesota said about the little Mogadishu and all the Somalis that are in Minnesota? He told the Minnesotans that maybe your families that have been there, that are entrenched there, that have businesses there, that have homes there, that have made a contribution to Minnesota, that if you don't want more of them, then you should leave. The mindset of America, the mindset of Europe right now.
I think that's the minority of Europe and the United States. It's just the elite, and the elite have their own perverted, twisted agenda, and they're foisting it upon us, dispossessed people, generally white Europeans, Americans, who are just basically getting pushed aside.
I'm not going to accept that the majority of Americans are victims, and the reason I'm not going to is that when you wave the flag for, when you pledge allegiance to, when you provide all manner of support on behalf of a government that is working completely against your interest, that is wholly and completely dishonest, that is mass murdering and belligerent, that is spying on you, shame on you. You don't get the I was victimized card.
It's true.
We'll be back after the commercial break. Kirk, I want to add a couple of things. One is that you have mentioned that what Paul brought up sounded exactly like the document that you read that was promoted by the CIA as to how to create the Syrian civil war.
Right.
May I also say that it sounds exactly like what Yahweh wrote in Yeshaya, Isaiah 18?
Oh, yeah.
That he used every adjective known to in Hebrew to convey that the United States would do these very things and do them in Syria.
Yeah.
He explained exactly who would do them, when they would do them, how they would do them, and where they would do them. The CIA document looks like they read Isaiah 18 and say, wow, okay, that's God. God, that really upsets God. So let's do it.
That's really sick.
Yeah, we have Jason calling in from Canada on the idea of should we support our government. And Jason, before you make your comment, can I just say that if Americans want to claim to be victims, then first they have to stop their dependence on government, which means Social Security and Medicare and all of that sort of thing. They need to stop supporting their government. They should stop singing the national anthem at sporting events and God Bless America at sporting events. They ought to stop flying the flag. They ought to stop voting in elections. And when they can actually say, that government is not representing us, if we are not dependent upon it, we are not contributing to it, then they can say that they're victims and they're being victimized by their government. Until then, I don't think so. But maybe you have a different view. Go ahead, Jason.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I brought this up once before, and I just wanted to explore the hypothetical, but I'm interested in getting back to Isaiah 18 afterwards. I mentioned once before about you mentioned supporting the government, and I mm-hmm. it dawned on me again. I mean, what would be the hypothetical if there was a revolution? The first thing that the American people did was, refuse to pay or charge tax.
Yeah. And did it universally.
Yes, if they were able to do it universally. Could.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's interesting here is that we assume that the taxes Americans pay actually supports the government, but that's not true. The majority of that which is spent by government is spent on the illusion of money, and a huge percentage of that which is collected in taxes is taxed because of the destruction of the value of money, creating more the impression of profit when in fact all you've done is destroyed the value of the currency in the first place. So the government seems to be able, so long as people have faith in it, to continue merrily along, at least for as long as people have faith in it, without any tax. You know, what's the difference in receiving tax for one-third of what you spend and receiving no tax at all? If two-thirds of what you spend isn't covered by tax, how big a stretch is it to stretch the illusion all the way to the breaking point? You know, I'm not certain that would have a consequence. You know that there is a crisis, a financial crisis in America that's worse than us spending $1 trillion on defense and intelligence, and worse than us spending $2 trillion on indulgences with Social Security and the Medicare pyramid schemes. And that is the overall credit issue in America. There's something like $75 trillion in existing credit in America, and that America is now running entirely on credit.
Right.
And that credit has no substance. There isn't even 1% of the currency necessary to facilitate the credit. Should somebody decide, you know what I think I want to do? If any significant number of people, even 5%, were to go to their ATM and say, you know, I think there's a risk in credit because our economy now is based entirely on credit, that I just want to take out my savings and I want it in cash.
They won't allow you.
No, they won't allow you, and they will ascribe all manner of terrorist threat to you. By the way, the police, the Justice Department can confiscate your money without any conviction, without any proof of anything. And you have to prove your innocence to get it back. They can take it all away if you were to try to do that. But if 5% of Americans tried to do that, the whole credit illusion would be brought down because there's less than 1% of the currency to back the credit that exists. So, I mean, it doesn't matter how we approach it. You know what's also interesting, Jason, is it reminded me, the Obaminator ran on hope we can believe in. And then you know what the first thing was that your new prime minister said in Canada?
Faith.
He said, "Always faith. You should place your faith in the government. If you place your faith in the government, there's nothing that we can't do."
Hmm.
It's religious.
Yeah.
It's the politics of religion. Religion is politics.
And another point I just want to make quickly.
Yes.
you see when the people allow stupidity to rule over them. Like,
yes.
One thing that jumps out of my mind is Japan.
Mm-hmm.
You have a lot of civilians that suffered
mm-hmm.
over
oh, yeah.
the war.
And yeah.
part of it was the fact that they
yeah, we burnt several hundred thousand up alive.
Yeah, they did allow and support that leadership
mm-hmm.
to rule over them.
Yeah.
And eventually that's what it came to.
Yeah, you know, you've said something, though, that is consistent with what I have said, because I didn't, I realized that the truth was already so remote from the mainstream consciousness of our society that I was unwilling to take the next step. I was saying that our government is amoral, that our government is incapable of making a quality decision, that the world's in a mess as a consequence of our stupidity. And you just used stupidity there. The Japanese people supported a stupid government. And the consequence was that they themselves suffered. I think that's too kind, Jason. I don't think our government is stupid. I think they're malevolent. I think that they are doing... In fact, I know. I don't have to think anymore. I know for a fact that our government is specifically doing things that are deliberately harmful to Americans and the world at large.
Yeah, I think Yao would call it evil.
Yeah, he'd call it evil. You know something? I was helping a friend out yesterday. My friend might even be listening to this program. He's a movie producer. And he had a character from Mexico that in a movie that he wanted to name Benjamin. And I said, no, don't do that. Not unless it's a really bad character. And he said, you know, why not? You know, my Jewish promoter for the movie says means son of the right or son of right. And I said, no. First of all, that wasn't what his mother named him, and his mother knew him.
Yeah.
And it's not what Benjamin stands for now. You can translate as right hand or south or to veer to the right. And, of course, in the case of Benjamin, they went south and were constantly in conflict with the Yahuda, and it's Yahweh prophetically calls Benjamin the wolf, which then was carried further by Yosha, who called Shaul a Benjamite, the wolf in sheep's clothing. And, of course, with King Saul, a Benjamite against Dod, David, the exemplar of what it means to be Yahuda, related to Yah, one Torah adverse, one Torah supportive. But what he caused me to do, because he said, you know, his promoter was saying, you know, only Rachel named him, gave him a derogatory name, and that in fact he was given this name, a positive name by his father. So I had a reason, therefore, to look at what Rachel had to say. And oh my God. You know that Rachel named him evil?
Yeah. We covered that once.
Yeah. Rachel named him evil. And so what I did is I went through, and I specifically went through the names that Rachel picked for him. And, oh, my goodness. You know, in fact, here's what I wrote. Rachel foreshadows the prophetic implications of Benjamin in Genesis 35:16 with Kashah, stubborn, unyielding, resistant, lack of humility, cruel, harsh, brutal, and causing great distress. She is foreshadowing King Shaul and the wannabe apostle Shaul from Benjamin. She is also, this is also reflected in the verb kashah, saying that this son was grievous, fierce, obstinate, difficult, and dispensing ill will. And that's reflected in Genesis, Bereshit 35:17, making King Saul a prototype for the wannabe apostle Shaul, author of half the Christian New Testament. I say you also notice that in Genesis 35:18, immediately upon naming this child of infamy, Rachel's soul departed, and she died.
Wow.
Foreshadowing Yahweh's calling Shaul, Paul, the plague of death throughout the prophets. Immediately upon his birth, she died. She called out his name, Ben Oni. Well, Ben is son. Oni means evil, unrighteousness, falsehood, idolatry, inequity, wickedness, vanity, ego, mischief, and affliction has come from me.
So my Oni, the E at the end there,
yeah,
was qualified as my.
Right. Yeah, from me.
Son of my evil.
Right. So she is saying that out of her, because the Y at the end, because it's based on On, that the Y at the end makes it that it's possessive, that it came from her. So evil has come from me. Unrighteousness has come from me. Idolatry and falsehood has come from me. Inequity and wickedness. Vanity and ego. Affliction has come from me. In other words, she's saying, Pauline Christianity has come from me. Wow. Isn't that something? So when you said that Yahweh would call it evil? Yeah. You're right on that one, Jason. Jason, since you brought up what we call it evil, let me finish this reply that I wrote to my friend. Rachel was the one that knew this boy. She knew that evil had emerged from her. She had carried this evil in her belly for 9 months. And immediately upon his birth, the mother of the child said, from me, here is the son of evil, of wickedness, of arrogance, of falsehood, has come from me. And the father, that of course at this point could never have known this child, knew nothing of this child other than they could just look at it. This child that has just claimed his wife's life. And rather than accepting, which would have been so much better for the world, this apt description of this boy as Ben Oni, from me is the son of evil, of falsehood. Father names him Benjamin. But for you to think that he named this child that had led to his mother's death, that his mother called pure evil, son of right, is nonsense. You know what the Hebrew word is for right? It's tzedak. It's not yamen. The Hebrew word for hand is yad. It's not yamen. So this idea that Benjamin is son of right as in correct, as in upright, as in righteous, is utter nonsense. Yamin is a directional term. It's not an assessment of good or bad. It is a directional term. But it's interesting to note that, of course, Rachel died and was buried after giving birth to the son of evil en route to the place from which Yosha would emerge. Derek, on the way to Ephrath Beth Lakam, to the place where fruit would be born and the branch would emerge from the house of bread. Fascinating, isn't it, Kirk?
Amazing. I'm just listening with open ears.
Yeah, it's God's clear. And it's amazing now in light of that document from the U.S. government, from its CIA, and it's actually a national intelligence briefing document, which means it's vetted by and promoted by the amalgamized CIA, FBI, Department of Justice, State Department, Military Intelligence, and Department of Defense.
You know, when speaking to Jason's comment and or Paul's, when America decided that the constitutional rights of protection, you know, when they waived those, then they stopped being innocent in my eyes. I mean, because I saw a movie, a Tom Hanks movie over the weekend, and the guy's being crucified because he's defending this Russian spy in this movie. And I wanted to stand up in the middle of the thing and say, you know, it's not the spy. He's defending the guy's rights for protection under the law.
Mm-hmm.
You people are nuts. Why don't, you know, and I decided not to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, first of all, I don't like Tom Hanks movies ever since he did that that series on the Vatican and the that whole thing that Christian Jesus was married to that whole thing, and when he did that was enough for me. I just said no, I ain't going with I'm not doing time for Tom Hanks anymore.
He was a good guy in this, but the thing was it was a lawyer defending the Constitution, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm going, why didn't anybody
care about that?
Yeah. They don't care.
Yeah, here's your government subverting the U.S. Constitution, your court system subverting the U.S. Constitution, your politicians subverting the U.S. Constitution, and no one cares. If you are going to subvert the document that provides the authority of all of those people, then what authority do they have?
Well, they can do anything they want.
Well, yeah, because they're not constrained by anything.
No. Nobody cares, so how innocent are we? We're not.
We're not. You know, and it was so obvious that the United States was the cause of the Syrian conflict. But I thought it was just out of utter stupidity. You know, I thought that George W. Bush was the biggest moron in the history of the world, and that George W. Bush invaded Afghanistan and Iraq, and that those invasions led to the Sunni-Shia conflict, which is obvious they did, but it was just born out of being befuddled, being too stupid to ever be a leader. That's not true.
No, I think his daddy planned all this, too.
It was all planned. We did this deliberately.
Mm-hmm.